The Friday Report with Lucy Morgan on Isle of Wight Radio.
Good afternoon. Welcome to the Friday Report. My name's Lucy. Thanks to John. And on the show today then, yes, the fallout from that big budget meeting. How are you affected? Are you worried? Should you be worried? Joining me in the studio, Councillors John Nicholson and Councillor Julia Baker-Smith, also from Unison, Mark Chiverton. And we want to hear from you in all the usual ways, really. You can find us on Twitter. We are at iWhite Radio, hashtag Friday Report. Find us on the text, IW a space and your message. Send it in to 81222. Or you could give us a call here in the studio. 822002 is the number to call here. And we just want to hear from you, really, your thoughts on that. How are you affected? Are you worried? Could more have been done, do you think? We'll go through some of the changes that have been made, what their impact might be. And we'll also hear from Council Leader Jonathan Bacon, who was speaking to Isle of Wight Radio immediately after that meeting on Wednesday night. Get in touch. We'll take a break, and when we come back, we'll talk budget.
The Friday Report. Getting to the heart of island issues. Isle of Wight Radio. The Friday Report with Lucy Morgan on Isle of Wight Radio.
So good morning then, or good afternoon rather, 11 past one already, and this is the Friday Report. It's the first Friday Report. After that budget was set, that budget, using inverted commas, which you can't see on the radio, but I think we can all imply. Joining me in the studio today, councillors and Unison representative. Good afternoon, councillors John Nicholson and Julia Baker-Smith and Mark Chiverton from Unison.
Good afternoon.
Hi, Lucy.
Thank you very much for coming in to join us. So it was a very big budget, a 3.99% rise in council tax, which works out at about 50%. Just over £50 per year on a Band D property, plus job cuts, plus also cuts to services. It was much talked about. We knew this was going to happen, and we're also told that the next really bad one is going to be next year when the council quotes will be bust. There is currently no way to set a legal budget for the Isle of Wight. No one really knows what that is going to mean. Before we start, we spoke to Jonathan Bacon, the council leader, who wasn't able to make it today. But I did have a long chat with him on Wednesday night after the meeting, and we're going to hear from him first, his immediate thoughts after that decision was made.
We had a lot of alternative proposals, a lot of which came up at the last minute, which we did consider, but I think the mood of the council meeting was that there were things they couldn't take forward because we didn't have enough information. So the main budget has gone through, but what I've undertaken to do towards the end of the meeting was to make sure that in the difficult year we've got ahead, we do look at everything, including those things that have been rejected at this stage. A number of them were rejected simply because they came late and we didn't have enough information. There may be something there to be looked at in the future.
The IMG proposal there, defeated only by one abstention, 17 against and 17 for and 18 against. A very close call thing there.
It was very close indeed, but there are quite a lot of... I have a number of issues with that proposal, because large parts of it were not explained, and that was made quite clear at the meeting. But that doesn't mean we can't look at it again, but it certainly wasn't in a fit state to take forward this evening, and I think that was recognised in the overall vote.
You described this as the most difficult budget the Isle of Wight Council's had to pass in years. If you will, just give me a few of the most disappointing aspects for you. Obviously, a 3.99% council tax rise and a host of different cuts, including job cuts.
I think you've set it out, really. The fact that we're having to cut some services to the bone, lose things, and leave ourselves with a very small selection of discretionary services is an indicator of the situation we're in. The real worry is, of course, that there's not enough left to cut to make things add up next year on the figures we've got. That's my real concern. What I'm glad with this budget is that we've given ourselves as firm a basis as we could have to go into what will be a very difficult year. So that's really the good thing to come out of this evening, I think.
There was some criticism from Conservative councillors that, you know, you should have seen this coming, that more preparations should have been made for this.
We've known it's coming for a long time. We've been dealing with cuts every year. I think what wasn't stressed enough this evening was that we had the complete bombshell in December that an extra $7 million was going to be cut from our budget this year, which we did not anticipate. We knew it was going to be bad. We were anticipating it was going to be bad, but we weren't anticipating it was going to be that bad. It is so bad, of course, that the figures that are being put forward for next year simply don't add up. So it's not that we have not been aware of the situation. I think we were dropped an absolute bombshell by the government. Well, two bombshells, really. Firstly, in that they added that extra $7 million to our budget gap in December. And they have not as yet given us anything to help, despite us making massive representations, a very strong case. The final version of the financial settlement offered us nothing. It's an utter kick in the teeth, but we do have the promise of special consideration, and that's what we've really got to work on now, to get that special consideration, but more importantly, get that converted into money.
There was mention of this open chequebook, the idea that the government minister would come down and say, have what you want, we've got it, have what you want. Some concern that that simply wasn't going to happen, and you said, well, it's got to happen.
Well, it has. I was disappointed in that a number of people on the other side of the chain were saying, effectively, that old phrase, we've got to cut our cloth. We've got just got to keep cutting and cutting. We can't. We've got very little left we can cut. The minister has got to bring his chequebook down because we need some more money. The case has been put that we need another £15-17 million each year on an ongoing basis to make things add up.
What's your comment to people who tonight will now be expecting to lose jobs, because there will be job cuts as part of this?
I'm sorry. We're being put in a very difficult position. We have absolutely tried to minimise the cuts that are taking place and minimise as well the job losses. I gave a firm undertaking this evening that wherever there are people who are going to be at risk in valued service areas, we will look at that extremely carefully. We will consult fully. We're not going to lose anyone if we can avoid it.
What's the sort of timescale that you're looking at there?
I couldn't give you that detail because obviously it's an ongoing process we're in. There are going to be some relatively immediate effects of the decisions that have been made tonight, but some of those decisions have a longer lifetime to be considered and worked through, and so the eventual outcome is not clear yet, but we will absolutely try to do what we can to maintain services and maintain jobs.
How do you go about getting towards that budget for next year? Presumably those discussions have to start now.
What we need to do is to pick up on what has been said by ministers so far, and indeed the Prime Minister, that the island is somewhere that is unique and experiences unique costs. The work we need to do now is to show exactly what those unique costs are, why the island is different, why the island is unique, and why we deserve the minister to come down with his checkbook open, ready to recognise those costs. But we've got to make a strong case. We've already made a pretty strong case, but now we need to go through it line by line, paperclip by paperclip, to prove conclusively, as I think we can, that this island deserves better treatment from government and deserves the minister to put a nice big figure in that chequebook so residents can get the services they need and require.
And just very finally, there were some cuts that you identified that you weren't prepared to make, and they included things like the funding support for people travelling to the mainland for cancer treatment. And the point was made that if those cuts are there and identified, then they should be made.
I think the position more is that at this point in time we should be saving what we can save, because those are very valued services for residents. Why should we jump into cutting something? As things stand next year, we don't have a council, let alone us going to have to make a lot of nasty cuts. What we're going to try and do is retain what we can for as long as we can, and at the same time, while we're doing that, we make our case to government that we deserve recognition of those unique costs, and we get the money to meet those unique costs so we can go ahead without cutting those services. Why cut them now when we might not have to? We can go ahead, maintain services, and hopefully start to develop this council and work back up from a fairly unpleasant baseline we've been put down to.
Council Leader Jonathan Bacon, thanks very much indeed.
Thank you.
Okay, so Council Leader Jonathan Bacon speaking on Wednesday night, immediately after that meeting. Let's, if we will, studio panel, pick up on the last point there. There were cuts that could have been made, and John Nicholson, the Conservatives were arguing, well, if you can make those cuts, and they added up to around sort of 3.5 million to that there or thereabouts figure. If you can make those cuts, you should make those cuts. And Jonathan Bacon saying, well, you know, we should be saving.
It's all a question of balance, and we live in a democracy. It would be quite wrong not to point out that there are extra cuts that could be made. But at the end of the day, it's the choice of the people whether we make those cuts or not. The one advantage of making those cuts would be that the savings that are made are immediate and they're passed on to future years. But of course, making cuts is not a pleasant thing to do, and that has to be balanced. So it's right to flag that, and it is a decision to be made.
Councillor Julia Baker-Smith, you have much to say on that very point. Do you want to jump in there?
I certainly did. Well, I was absolutely astounded by Councillor Dave Stewart's assertions that we should be making those extra 3.7 to £4 million worth of cuts. These are the cuts that would hit the most vulnerable people in our society, the elderly people, the people who are absolutely reliant on these services. And I was utterly amazed. I wrote down what Councillor Stewart said. He said that you've already identified a further 3.7 million of savings, which you have decided not to implement. If this is based on any ideology of a socialist approach, then that won't cut with this government. Well, I just find that shocking. I don't think that's socialism, Lucy. I think that's common sense and humanity.
Isn't it about staving off the worst, though, that this is going to happen at some point? It's the inevitable. It's giving people a full sense of hope.
I don't think so, Lucy. As Jonathan Bacon quite rightly said, if we make those cuts this year, then those services are gone. When we're looking over this year at ways that we can save those, that we can work with third sector partners, then that's absolutely what we should be doing. The numbers simply don't add up next year, whatever happens. Whether we were to have taken those extra 4 million out or not, we would still only have £92 million to spend after this round of budget savings. And we simply, at the cost of our services, is simply more than that. The cost of our statutory services alone is £106 million. 92 left, £106 million for statutory services alone. So that £4 million wasn't going to make a difference. It's not even a drop in the ocean, in fact.
John Nicholson, I mean, at what point do you say, do you know what, we had Dave Stewart on the show last week, and he was saying, look, you know, that some things are going to be hurtful, and I don't agree with everything. However, the government was elected in on austerity, and we have to go with the people. That's what the people want. At what point for you is it about what local people want and what that national vote says, and, you know, when is too much austerity?
Well, it's a very, very tough situation, and I don't think that anything is gained by sweeping these sort of decisions under the carpet. I take Julia's point entirely that there are very difficult decisions to make. People are going to suffer by it, but it's only from the ashes that the phoenix rises.
I've got a text in here from Matt. Why is it people that are in full-time employment, struggling to make ends meet, always have to clear up over people that can't be bothered to work and get it all paid for in the system? It's wrong. It needs changing. It seems very unfair, this increase. I honestly don't know where that extra 4% of money is coming from. It's a tricky one, isn't it? Who wants to jump in on that particular thing? Is it something wrong with the system? Should people be helping out en masse here? Is it a community issue?
I think everyone has been hit, Lucy, and I think it's very unfortunate that everyone has been hit. But as you know, there's also been a reduction in the council tax benefit support scheme as well. So It's incredibly difficult, and we don't want to be hitting the most vulnerable people in society. But at the same time, I think everybody is having to take their share, and that's very, very upsetting, whether you work or whether you're unable to.
Mark Chiverton, your thoughts?
Well, I think it is very important that the council has bought essentially a year by bringing some money out of balances to protect some of the services for the most vulnerable. And just to talk about some of those that have been reprieved, both in terms of in terms of both jobs, but more importantly, the services they provide, the Adelaide, the Gouldings, supporting people, a homelessness team, empty property team. All of those jobs are absolutely essential and do provide a service to some of the most needy and vulnerable sections of the community. Once these services are gone, you'll never get them back. I think it's absolutely essential that the year is used to think about how some of these things could be possibly be delivered in an alternative way. But we need to mount a really strong, good community-wide campaign led by councillors, all parties, involving trade unions, businesses, other stakeholders, Unite the Isle of Wight, the campaigning group, to really get the message home to central government that the Isle of Wight needs more money. It is I know many councils will say they're a special case, but the fact is, many other councils, bigger shire councils, who are already in better off than we are, have had more money put to them. We haven't got any additional funding. We need that funding. We're much more heavily dependent on public services than most other sections of the country. This is a poor area. We're very heavily dependent on the public sector for meaningful employment. We've already lost probably 1,000 jobs in the public sector in the last 4 or 5 years, if you take the council and schools, and that's worse because we've had the announcement today of the consequence of all this, of 146 jobs at risk and 82 likely further job losses. That is an absolute catastrophe. We need to put the pressure on government. Andrew Turner needs to step up to the plate. He needs to be absolutely the representative of the Isle of Wight people in Westminster and not the representative of the Tory government on the Isle of Wight. I'm sure John and others will come back to me on that particular point, but I think it is very important that all of us of political parties and none really get the message out. The Isle of Wight needs the greater level of resources. It's just not realistic. It's not doable. And if that doesn't work, then frankly, it's going to be a catastrophe.
Andrew Turner argues, of course, that he has been the voice of the Isle of Wight. He's voted against the government before. He's mentioned the Isle of Wight in a very high profile way in the last few weeks in terms of this particular issue. He's been involved in those meetings going up to see the government minister. I mean, what more could he do?
Well, I think that just on that, I recognise that he has, you know, asked the question in Westminster. I know he's been involved in those talks. Having said that, he did still vote for the cuts package in terms of the vote in Parliament. I think that's disappointing because many of his colleagues in Hampshire, in Oxfordshire, of course, where the Prime Minister's constituency is, in Essex or whatever, there will be quite a number of Conservative MPs there who would have been putting the pressure on. And they did manage to secure additional resources. Andrew Turner didn't. And in those circumstances, I think it is disappointing. It's not, I don't want to be personal about Andrew, but I think it's disappointing that he didn't vote against that package because the Isle of Wight is so negatively affected. I'm very sorry that didn't happen.
John Nicholson, the government needs to do more. The minister needs to bring an open checkbook. We've heard that they are recognising the island's, quote, unique status, but what does that really mean? Are we going to see any more cash, do you think?
We need to fight very hard for the Isle of Wight. On the island, we are greatly advantaged environmentally by our isolation, but we are severely disadvantaged economically from our isolation as an island. I'm not sure that is entirely heard up at Westminster, but I think that what Mark says is entirely right. This is something that the island residents and island councillors, everybody has to work hard to try and get our case across, because there's no doubt about it, we do need extra funding, otherwise we will be lost.
But how likely is it, John, do you think? I mean, I asked Dave Stewart last week how he felt about the fact that this was coming from a Conservative government, that you are the Conservative representatives at a local level. Does that make you feel uncomfortable?
I'm an optimist, and I think that if we put our case strongly enough and we put our case soundly enough, that we will get what we ask for.
Can I just come in on that? Because I think it's a combination. I think plainly the case needs to be worked up by councillors with senior council officers. I think there could be some expertise brought in from the wider community in terms of various specialisms on that. I think also we do need a really visible community campaign. I mean, if this was happening in Liverpool or Glasgow, you would have hundreds of people out on the streets. You'd get hundreds of people at lobbies in Westminster. You'd have bishops, church leaders, other and community leaders, all very visible. And I think it is very important. This is the next few months are very important for the future of the Isle of Wight, because if we get the wrong result here, we are going to be in a very negative cycle indeed. I don't want to be, you know, pessimistic about that, but that is the reality of it. And I think it's really important that we galvanise the sense of urgency so that we can use this time that has been bought to take this forward in a positive way.
Mark, you were among those out the front of County Hall on Wednesday afternoon holding a protest as that meeting prepared and gathered and got underway. We heard Jonathan Bacon there at the start of the show saying, I'm sorry, we've done what we can. Is sorry enough for you?
Well, we want to get into discussions with councillors to make sure that as Jonathan Bacon has promised, that any job losses can be minimised, and look at alternative employment for people elsewhere within the council where there are, you know, vacancies arising. I think, incidentally, there are some things that have been cut that Jonathan Bacon and Steve Stubbings and others have said that they would look closely at with us. I mean, below the radar is a change to Westminster House, which is a centre for people with learning disabilities that could potentially be at risk. There's the Memory Club, which provides a great service for people with Alzheimer's, early stages Alzheimer's, stroke victims, whatever, and that is going to be cut, and there hasn't been so much publicity around that, and I think that those need to be revisited. But I do think the council is in a very difficult situation here. I do believe the responsibility is central government. They need to make local government funding overall credible again, because this isn't a problem exclusive to the Isle of Wight, but I do think the Isle of Wight is a very special case because we're much more heavily dependent and have been deprived more significantly of funds for a longer period, particularly this year. But next year is going to be a disaster. The next few months are absolutely crucial.
There's lots of nodding in the studio. We've got a call. If you'd like to don your headphones at this stage, I will say to this caller, good afternoon. You're on the Friday Report. What's your name?
Hello, my name's Stephen Butler and I'm the spokesperson for the Isle of Wight TUC. Can you hear me, Lucy?
I can indeed. Yes, what's your point today, Steve?
Yeah, well, I believe that the word austerity, and this is on behalf of the TUC, the word austerity has been used by this Tory government, and this is ideology, to batter public services, break them up, privatise them, Lucy, and we need a government that cares for all the people.
But, Steve, how do you feel about this argument that, you know, this is what people in this country voted for? This is an elected government, and it was elected very strongly on that austerity agenda.
We do this first-past-the-post system, but it's not exactly when you look at the percentage of the people who voted for the Tories, it's not all of them. If you put the others all together, it's sort of a mass opposition, isn't it?
And how would you move forward from here? I mean, we have the government that we've got. That's not going to change any time soon, but we do have to make these cuts.
The only thing is, as we can do, they've tried to start here on the island with the Unite the Isle of Wight, but it needs the mass of people to say enough is enough. I mean, if Cameron's own mother and relatives can have say, look, come on, you know, you've got to do something about this, then surely he should start to listen.
Steve Butler, thank you very much indeed. Thanks for calling the Friday Report today. Let me put those comments to our panel here. Your thoughts on what he had to say?
I couldn't agree more with him. I absolutely couldn't agree more. This austerity is, in my view, austerity is a lie, and this is a personal view, but I cannot see how austerity is working to reduce the national debt. The national debt has doubled since 2010. As far as I'm concerned, this is a pure ideology in order to privatise services and take them out of public hands. This is what Margaret Thatcher was trying to do in the 80s, and this is a continuation of that. In fact, this government, since 2010, have privatised more than Margaret Thatcher.
John, Mark, your thoughts on that?
Well, we live in a democracy, we have an electoral system, and if people don't like it, they can simply vote in another direction. We are going through, as a society, a great period of change. The existing models do not work, and it doesn't depend... It doesn't matter where you look. The existing model does not work.
The financial model or voting model?
The model that we use, look at healthcare, for example. Now, one of the things that I am working on, and you hear it now on the radio, national radio, on the television all the time, is the great effect that mental state plays throughout our community, whether that's in education, whether it's in health, well-being, in police and crime. In every single aspect, I'm an employer. I've been in business for 37 years. I see it in the people that I employ, how important their mental state is to their performance. It affects their families. It affects their lives. We're going through a huge change where we have to really stop looking at the cause and treating the symptoms. We have to look beyond that and look at the cause of the cause. And on the Isle of Wight, I work very closely with people across the floor. I work very closely with members of the executive. I work very closely with our fantastic Director of Public Health. And you will see the island is particularly set to lead in this field. But we have to make changes, and those changes will be painful. People don't like change, but we have to go through this process to come out stronger.
Yeah, just on that, I think people are up for change. I don't think, obviously, change is uncomfortable, but the point is it's change in an ever more pressurised climate. The social needs are greater, but people aren't given the resources to meet them. Now, Julia's talked about privatisation. The fact is, she's absolutely right that David Cameron may look more cuddly than Margaret Thatcher. I don't want to cuddle him myself, but I have to say that this is a very a driven government, and in terms of the austerity agenda, frankly, that is an absolute disaster. If you're talking about, I agree that in terms of the care world, there probably should be a mixed economy of care, public sector, voluntary sector, private sector. But the fact is, the mix has gone massively towards the private sector, which is in itself proving to increase cost for the public sector. Also, there have been many scandals over the years, whereby private sector provision has been shown to be quite poor, and that they've been those issues have been very well publicised. I've got a deep concern about some of these cuts as well. That you can introduce the cut, but actually the cost as a result of that unmet social need can then come back to bite the community in another way. And I think there's a real danger in all of this. I do think the government is driven by a dislike of the public sector. I think it's quite a tragedy, really, because I'd say many Tory councillors up and down the country will say quite openly, we need more funding. And I think the government is far too ideological, and they don't like the public sector. It's all about a desire to smash what's public, and they've got nothing to put in its place.
Absolutely, Mark. I couldn't agree more. I think when you hand things over to the private sector, you have to be aware that the private sector are there to make money. They're not doing it out of the goodness of their hearts. And that's where public sector money ends up in private sector hands and costs can end up spiralling. And it's very important that we maintain our services for our people on this island to ensure that the vulnerable are looked after and they're not priced out of the market.
Can I just say though, do you not think here that, you know, we have very differing ends of the political spectrum being represented here, that surely actually the answer is probably somewhere in between, that in reality there are savings that can be made and that I as a council taxpayer probably shouldn't really have to pay for those things if the savings can be made, but equally, yes,
the different ends of the same stick, and you're quite right, but it's right, you know, I respect entirely what Mark and Julia say, and I think that these messages have to be given because they're cautionary messages, and I think that we have to be aware of the impact of the cuts that we're making, and it's right that this is flagged, but we have to make an intelligent, balanced judgment, and when we make those judgments, we have to bear the consequences.
It's quite interesting. I mean, if you look at the council as an employer of labour, if some of those areas that are potentially at risk, like the Adelaide and the Gouldings next year, there are many people employed in that sector. I've got to say, most of them on very low wages. Indeed, the idea of, you know, public sector employees being well paid is almost entirely a myth. There might be one or two at the top, the very top level, but the reality is most of them are struggling to make ends meet, and delivering an effective service in very straitened circumstances. Just in terms of the private sector, in terms of their need to make money, it is the fact that in the last couple of years, we've seen one care provider have to, or decide to, offload all its learning disability homes because they weren't in any way making money, and the council's had to absorb those as the provider of last resort. I think that quite often there is a misunderstanding as well, you know, with the general public. If you ask many members of the public, do they like their local complex for the elderly, their library, their school or whatever, they like all of those services. But if you ask them, what do you think of the council, well, they don't like that at all, but they don't link or make the necessary links. And I think it is very important that people, there is a process of discussion with the public, so there's a better understanding of where their money is going. Efforts are made all the time to save money. I know that because I'm negotiating on behalf of people all the time. But the fact is, if these services are gone, then the community as a whole, and particularly the most vulnerable, are going to be suffering for generations ahead.
At that point, we're going to have to take a quick break. When we come back, I'm going to raise another point that's been sent in on the text. We'll do that after a break, though. Feel free to text us, IW, a space in your message. Send it in to 81222, or you can tweet hashtag Friday Report. We are at iWhite Radio, 822-002 on the phones.
This is the Friday Report. The Friday Report. Getting to the heart of island issues. Isle of Wight Radio.
Welcome back to the Friday Report. My name's Lucy. Joining me in the studio today, councillors John Nicholson and Julia Baker-Smith and Mark Chiverton from Unison. Let's go straight to that text that we had, a follow-up one from Matt, who texted us earlier. I understand that everyone needs to chip in, because we were talking about, you know, making it a community cut and how the most vulnerable in society seemed to be affected, and we were talking earlier about how actually everyone's doing their bit. I understand that everyone needs to chip in, says Matt, but why not pay cuts by top dogs at council? That would save hundreds of thousands of pounds. The system needs changing, and that seems paramount. Julia, I'll come to you on this first. Was cuts to leading councillors' pay, to those allowances you get, were they on the savings agenda? Were they on the not recommended savings agenda?
We have an independent remuneration panel who quite rightly look at councillors' allowances, and it wouldn't be right for us as councillors to be setting our own allowances, just as it isn't right for MPs to be setting theirs.
But they weren't on the recommended savings list, they were on the not recommended list.
Because it's not something that we as councillors can be influencing ourselves. That's something that needs to come from the independent panel.
Which at national government level has been levied against the government time and time again from both political sides. Very difficult as a non-politician to look at that and go, is everyone doing their bit? Shouldn't someone be taking charge of taking a pay cut here?
I think there's a misconception, Lucy, and I don't really want to get too far into councillors' allowances, but I think there's a misconception that councillors' allowances are in some way equal to MPs' pay. I'm quite happy to share that last year my allowance was £12,500. That was my entire income as a single mum. And I work on average between 40 and 60 hours a week. So while I absolutely wouldn't be asking for any more to do what I do, if it was cut, it would make it very difficult for a young mum like myself and for other people that take time out of work and reduce their working hours to be counsellors. And we would end up just with an elite, older class of person doing the job.
Yeah, and I don't want to suggest for a second that you're on a par with MPs in terms of pay, but it's that argument. It's set independently. We can't take... we can't make our own figures, which means that then surely no one really takes responsibility for going, maybe there should be a pay cut.
Like I say, it's something that should be decided independently, because it's dangerous if you start influencing a pay cut. Could you in future, in better times, be influencing a pay rise? You don't want to put that in the hands of individual councillors. That needs to be decided independently.
Mark, can I get your thoughts on that then? The idea that the top dogs, as Matt is calling them, takes that pay cut. How does that £12,500 allowance compare, say, to what some of your members might be earning?
Well, let's say there are some very low paid members of staff within the council, some of them still below the government living wage. I've got to say, what I would want to comment on is not so much the members' allowances, but I would say that there has been a lot of money expended in recent years in engaging very highly paid consultants rather than actually having directly paid staff. I do think more work needs to be done to stop that culture. Some work has been done by the Employment Committee fairly recently, but I've got to say there are, if you look at the staffing list in terms of some of those figures, the gap between the very top people, and particularly people who are brought in frequently as external consultants, and what people are paid as care workers, say at the Adelaide or the Gouldings or library staff or whatever, the gap is absolutely enormous. And I think more work needs to be done, because I think some money, you know, could be saved at the top. And I think it's that kind of situation that gets local government quite a bad name, because people will look at that and notice that, rather than the hundreds of people who are working for less money. But I do think that needs to be clamped down on further.
But they pay for themselves, don't they? I mean, the reason they're brought in is because they make savings, and you're looking at a multi-million pound budget, so therefore they effectively pay their own salaries.
Not always. I've got to say quite a number of members.
I think, Mark, when it comes to consultants, we've drastically reduced the number of consultants that have been used under this administration. Consultants were very frequently used under the last administration, and now we only bring in consultants under exceptional circumstances where there is actually a saving to be made by that person with that expertise coming in. And if we were to employ someone of that calibre at that level on a permanent basis, they might cost us over £100,000 a year, and with on cost and what have you, even more than that. So by bringing in someone for a month or 2 months on a fraction of that cost, if they're going to be saving the authority money, then that's why we go down that route. But it's absolutely not something that we do out of choice and out of only used in necessity.
I would accept the fact there are some areas that are just propped up by the use of short-term agency staff. There have been times when childcare social work has been difficult to recruit and people have need to be brought in, and it's a very difficult area. I have to say that I don't share your confidence in terms of all the consultants that have been engaged. I accept the fact there are a lot less than there used to be, and that's good. But I've got to say, I wouldn't necessarily share your opinion that all of them, or the comment that was made by Lucy, that all of them have necessarily saved the council money, because I've got to say some of them, I think there would be a view of some of our lower paid members that some of them had come in, been paid a lot of money and just caused a lot of confusion and now have disappeared. But
I didn't say all of them either, but I did tell you, you know, I did make the point that that's why they're brought in the first place.
But I think it is an area that we need to constantly look at. I'm not saying that you could never get benefit from a consultant. As I said, some agency staff, some areas are propped up by those staff. But as far as possible, we do need to be employing paid staff on good wages where they're rewarded properly for the work they do, but not exorbitant.
Well, not only Absolutely. That, Mark, we need to attract people that are good for the job, and I think that's what you were going to say. I stole the words out of your mouth, Julia.
You have, absolutely. And the Employment Committee, you know I sit on the Employment Committee, Mark, and I work closely with the unions through the committee that we have between members and unions. And the Employment Committee are doing extremely good work at the moment with Councillor Lumley to ensure that the number of consultants we're using at a high level are reduced and that we're bringing in permanent staff into those posts where it's absolutely necessary.
I would say that, you know, Councillor Lumley, in terms of his work of chairing the Employment Committee, and indeed, you know, some of the work that he's done in terms of the recent budget, is doing a great job in looking at all those areas in terms of cutting costs where it's necessary, but also preserving services. Of course, the Employment Committee will have an important area of things to look at on Monday when it looks at the latest announcement in terms of job losses, because I think I said earlier there are 146 jobs at risk as a result of this budget package and 82 projected definite job losses, and that is a very big problem that we need to be addressing and talking about.
That's incredibly upsetting, Mark, incredibly upsetting. And I think, as Jonathan said, you know, all he can say to that is that he's sorry, and we will work tirelessly to ensure that we can redeploy people where possible to ensure that the impact of these cuts is as minimal as possible.
And now I think that takes us full circle, which is perfectly timed, really. I just want to, before we finish up, clarify a couple of points, one of which is we were playing a Vox earlier on today. We were speaking to some people out and about on the Isle of Wight, and we were saying to them, you know, what are you worried about when it comes to the budget? And one of the things that came up is the future of public toilets. We've had a tweet from Councillor Phil Jordan, who's on the executive. He says, concerned that residents have about toilet closures are misplaced. Over 95% are being taken over by town and parish councils, not closed, says Phil Jordan in a tweet earlier today, which is great as long as you're not in that 5% of areas that is. You probably want to make sure you've gone to the loo before you left home. And Julie, you mentioned, I just wanted to clarify, £12,500 there in terms of allowance. Is that before or after you joined the executive? Do you get an extra bit on the executive?
That was before I joined the executive. To be honest, I haven't even checked what my new allowance is, but I'm sure I can update you once I've had my first pay slip. In terms of the toilets, that 95% actually equates to one toilet. There is one toilet on the island that hasn't been taken over as yet by a town and parish council, and we're working closely with that town or parish council in order to ensure that one is taken over as well. So if we're successful with that one toilet, then we'll be able to say that 100% of toilets have been saved by moving to a different model with town and parish council. There have been a number of services that we're very grateful for the hard work of the town and parish councils for taking over, and that has been saved. Things like grass cutting, grounds maintenance contracts, environment officers, all of those things have been saved over previous years through finding new ways of working. This administration have been finding new ways of working, and it has been incredibly successful. So although we are looking at some of the worst cuts that we have had to face, they could have been a lot worse.
And final points to round up. John Nicholson?
Yeah, what I'd like to say, Lucy, we must remember that one thing that this country is great at, and that is innovation. On the Isle of Wight, we have some very innovative businesses, and we must safeguard those businesses and enable them to grow, because that is the future of the Isle of Wight. It's the future of our young people. It's the future of our prosperity, and we need to align our education system with the jobs that are out there and the future of this island.
And Mark Chiverton, final point for before we must go to the news. We're already a minute late.
I said already, I think the next few months are very crucial to the defence of public services on the Isle of Wight. I would urge all councillors of all parties, our members of the public, campaigning groups, to work together to really maximise the impact, to make sure that when Greg Clark comes to the Isle of Wight, he's got a clear picture of what is needed, and that we really make sure that we get the level of funding that we need to avoid the catastrophe that will occur if that doesn't happen.
Thank you very much indeed to our panel today then. Councillors John Nicholson and Julia Baker-Smith and Mark Chiverton from Unison, thank you very much for joining me in the studio. That's been the Friday Report. Just to update you on a travel incident at the moment, there's delays on the Red Funnel car ferry. That's due to what's being described as a police incident. We'll have more for you in the bulletin with John at 2 o'clock. And that is pretty much it from me. Heather McCallum on your radio next.
The Friday Report with Lucy Morgan on Isle of Wight Radio.